Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Well, we're going to start with a downer because it's... Oh, is it a downer? No, it's going to be an upbeat number because we're going to start very much with the tributes that Richard Fitzwilliams wasn't able to provide recently to the late Christopher Plummer and Cicely Tyson. We've also got in the studio Rebecca Bond from Norwich. We've got Kira Alsbrook from Derbyshire, but she's in Lincoln. And we've got Robin Pierce as well. So that's great. Richard, Christopher Plummer or Cicely Tyson, who are you going to start with?
Well, Christopher Plummer, I mean, he became an international name, of course, for Captain from Trapped in the Sound of Music. And as legend has it, and as we all know, he couldn't stand it and found the role one-dimensional and during the filming was absolutely impossible. And that's a generous summary of what I've been reading. But I think the important stress when we look back on his very long career, I mean, some almost seven decades, I mean, what is extraordinary about Christopher Plummer is the number of his roles, the breadth of his stage career, the fact that there were so many, whether it was Hamlet or Macbeth, he was with the Royal Shakespeare Company at one time. I mean, from a privileged upbringing, he was able to do what he liked and behave in the way he wanted to. I mean, he was a hellraiser in the tradition of Burton and O'Toole. Doesn't sound in any sense an easy person, but I mean, we're looking at a series of very, very interesting roles. I mean, as John Paul Getty recently, did anyone see him in All the Money in the World when he replaced Kevin Spacey?
No, I'm afraid not.
Was delighted to actually sort of bring that up when he did a tribute to him last week. Personally, I think he never actually surpassed his role in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. But carry on, Richard.
Well, I mean, when I remember him, most particularly as Oedipus in the 1960s, and I mean, that when he blinds himself, I mean, that role, that scene, it's haunted me for nearly 50 years. So, I mean, that is my particular memory of him. He could be absolutely superb, Rudyard Kipling in The Man Who Would Be King. But on the other hand, as Tolstoy in The Last Station, where he got an Oscar nomination, I thought he was inadequate.
But Richard, unless you've actually heard Hamlet in the original Klingon, you've never lived, and General Chang will by far and away actually be number one in the Christopher Plummer oeuvre. He never dished that in the same way he dished Sound of Music. I rest my case.
Well, yes, and also, of course, Waterloo playing the Duke of Wellington and looking, and I think this was a feature of Plummer. He was always pleased with himself, whatever he was doing. Because, I mean, he knew he had the talent, he had the physicality, he had the capacity to be to drink a lot and be absolutely impossible. But I mean, he was a first-class performer and he got his Oscar very late in life, playing a gay man in Beginners who comes out extremely late. No doubt a very good performance. And I mean, he was a remarkable figure, but The Sound of Music is the most popular musical ever made. And for all his personal loathing of it, and he gave it a series of nasty nicknames, the facts were that it brought him
he
to
came
a,
to love I mean, it though Richard he came to love it in later years, as we know from his co-star Angela Cartwright and indeed Julie Andrews. But let's move on before I actually say something like, in so many ways Christopher Plummer was like the Canadian version of Robin Pierce. In some ways, I'll say no more. Richard, Cicely Tyson.
And also Cicely Tyson, who's died at 96, a remarkable African-American actress, well-known for Sounder, which was in the 1970s, for the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, which was a notable role, and most recently for The Help in 2011, which was a film that was much praised with an all-star cast. She was also married to Miles Davis, and she won an honorary Oscar, and someone who will indeed be sadly missed. And I would also just like to pay a personal tribute to probably the best French screenwriter who's ever been. I mean, if you mention this collection of films, The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie, Belle du Jour, Cyrano de Bergerac, The Tin Drum, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. We've got Jean-Claude Carrière, who's died aged 89, and he may not have been the household name here, but I mean, he's an absolute genius.
Indeed so, and certainly paved the way with Belle du Jour for Catherine Deneuve and a whole variety of other fine folk as well. Okay, moving on to Greenland, I think. Richard, hold fire for a moment, because I know that Rebecca and Robin have both seen this. Robin's also got his review to hand as well. Keir, I'm not sure whether you've checked out Greenland as yet.
I have, actually. I watched it last night.
Okay. I mean, apart from the fact that Gerard Butler, I could be very cruel and say he's always been a kind of contemporary version of Jean-Claude Van Damme or Chuck Connors. You know what you're going to get. It's not great. And how he was ever considered as Bond, I don't know. Marina Baccarin, fine actress. I don't know. But let's find out initially. Well, actually, Kira, we'll come to you first, because you're back on the show for a long time. What did you make of Greenland?
To be fair, I'm not really a sci-fi kind of action-packed girl kind of thing, but I did really enjoy it. I don't know, it was just the way it was edited really well for a start, between the action, and you kind of saw him instead of being like kind of a superhero type thing, you know, with all of his muscles and defeating everybody, you kind of see him as, you know, just an ordinary family man kind of thing, and it's, you know, it's quite interesting to see him in that role. But no, I think especially with lockdown and how it's affected everybody, it's kind of made you realise that despite all the disaster that's going on around the world at the moment, it's, you know, it's a matter of protecting your family at the end of the day. And, you know, I think he really, really smashed that role, to be fair. Yeah, I really look forward to seeing him something else.
Okay. Well, good news on that part of you. Rebecca, when you're not actually attempting to actually give CPR to cats that you find in Norwich, it didn't work, listener. Any sort of particular sort of thoughts on Greenland?
So I really enjoyed it. I don't think I've ever been so on edge for a film ever. In fact, I had my Apple Watch on while I was watching it, and it came up with a notification saying my heart rate had got so high I needed to calm down, and it told me to stop breathing. So I was that, you know, on edge throughout the film. I thought it was really gripping. I loved the action in it. And I agree with Kira that I'm not usually a sort of action-packed kind of, you know, movie lover. But for me, it was the perfect balance of action, storyline, you know, quite emotional too, which I really loved.
Wow. Robin, you selected this last week and you said, OK, let's run with this. You should have at least put a kind of warning out for sensitive souls like Rebecca that it could increase the heart rate to almost unbearable levels.
Well,
yeah, we might have gone to a quartet today.
Thank goodness it didn't elevate mine. I could not be here now. I chose this. I read the synopsis, and I'm a longtime fan of disaster movies. I mean, I love stuff like, you know, Towering Inferno, Meteor,
Earthquake,
Earthquake, all of them. So I thought, yeah, let's give. It's been a while since I've seen a disaster movie, and of course, there is a rigid formula to these things. There are things that have to happen in every disaster movie. Number one, you have to have a family. Number two, the family has to have been split up. The father has gone away. So you know, right from the very beginning, because all the cards are on the table, all the pieces are in play, Gerard Butler, as the father, is the absentee father who has cheated on his willowy, gorgeous, but she'll have to be stronger than she looks, wife, ably played by Marina Baccarin from Gotham, Firefly, the Deadpool movies. And there must be a child.
The sickly child.
Must be ill. There must be a need for this child to run out of life-saving medication to give more impetus to the story, and all of these come into play, and you know they're going to get split up. Now, the natural disaster that's on its way is, of course, a comet, and it's heading right towards Earth. Comet, for those of you who don't know, is an icy mass of solid gas. This is a planet killer. It's on its way, And out of a clear blue sky comes not only the comet, but a government warning. And Gerard Butler's character is, and his family, are set to have to go off to a secret government location because they have been selected as survivors, which immediately makes the neighbors jealous. Okay, we can see this. Then there's a perilous cross-state trek to get to where they need to be. The kid leaves his medicine in the 4x4.
He wanted a comfort blanket.
He has to go back, and I'm thinking this is where they all get split up. Yes and no. This is where the film actually takes an original kind of turn and becomes something more than the sum of its parts, I would say, because the father gets the medicine, but in the meantime, the child has been rejected by the government because of his illness, and the parents are faced, or the mother might have to leave him behind. Now, in years gone by, we might have said, well, the US government would never do such a thing.
Of course it would.
4 years of Trumpism have taught us completely different.
You're not fit, you don't go.
Yeah, exactly. So now they are split up. They go their separate ways. And they even get split up into three at one point. Credibility stretch that so many bad things happen within 48 hours to these people. But if you take them just one at a time, they're all actually quite credible. They are examples, extreme, I admit, of behaviours that we have seen among people during the pandemic. The I have my rights. There's even a bit of MAGA-ism in there. It's, the ending is formulaic and you can see it coming from further than they can see the comic coming from. But it is a worthwhile almost 2 hours. The effects are good, the editing's good, the situations are good, and better than anticipated performances from Gerard Butler and Marina Baccarin in heavily stereotypical roles, and in blatant defiance of what Alex has said, I still believe that Gerard Butler should have been Bond after Pierce Brosnan. Now the cat, not Rebecca's cat, another cat, is among the pigeons. I sit back in my chair and I fold my arms and let you do your mischief.
Richard, over to you. For goodness sake, I mean, I find it difficult to get above 6.5 out of 10 for this one, but never mind. Over to you. You might say it's a hidden gem.
Well, I mean, first to Gerard Butler, I was introduced to him with the movie 300, which was a wonderful cartoon-like look at the Battle of Thermopylae. And I mean, there was Butler flexing his pecs, and he did it very well indeed. But of course, subsequently, there have been these action movies. And I mean, Robin has analysed the type of film that we're about to see here or about to watch or have been watching. And I mean, at the time when we're threatened with this ghastly pandemic, somebody had the bright idea of having a comet, fragments from a comet, which were about to destroy humanity. And one of the things I think that is effective in this movie are the rather sinister, cryptic messages that warn of the gathering apocalypse, and you only you only hear very, very suddenly a voice which will say Europe will disintegrate in
let's face it, America wasn't going to get it, was it? You know, it's going to be the Europeans.
Well, I think What was quite effective in this movie, I do have to say that, I do have to say that I enjoyed it. But what I wouldn't have done would have been to take it to a level where, quite frankly, I was as gripped as Rebecca was. I mean, I'm always delighted when movies have appeal. And I mean, this one seems to have tapped into a sort of general feeling that you have a family. You have a family that, gets separated. And I mean, you have formulas, and Robin has given us an excellent summary of saving spoilers. And we have to be careful here. But I think we all have a pretty good idea in this movie of what is going to happen. I mean, I'm trying to get enthusiastic. I do have to say, Rebecca, that your heartbeat was racing for you. My pulse was hardly moved by it. I just sat back and I, excuse me, I quite enjoyed it. What we meet, John Garrity, played by Gerard Butler, structural engineer, and his efforts to take his estranged wife, Alison, played by Marina Baccarin, and their diabetic son, Nathan, played by Roger Dale Floyd, from mainland America, which of course is facing annihilation. Tampa in Florida has gone down early, to the comparative safety of a massive underground bunker complex in Greenland, which was a relic from the Cold War. I mean, with any film with Gerard Butler, we expect extraordinary physical feats, and the fact that we don't get them here because they're not really required, it's basically the family, and Robin has given us an excellent exposition as to how these sort of movies tend to pan out. I have to say that I was a bit disappointed that we didn't... I'm not suggesting 2012 should be repeated, but in that
nothing movie, wrong with 2012. It was a modern day parable of the Ark. You want disaster movies, you go to those guys.
Oh, 2012 had all the disaster scenes in the world. I mean, it seemed to me that we had painted, or rather obviously painted, fragments of comets quite often here. I mean, there wasn't. There were the CGI, I thought, I writing in my review for Movies One, which is online, I thought the CGI was rather poor and the prop was rather contrived and predictable, and the music was a bit of a dirge. And I think it could have been much more exciting. But yes, I think he turned in a performance that suited this role. Marina Baccarin, she gave very adequate support. I like these sinister messages that do warn you, and they do grip you. And the airlift of the specially chosen in chaotic circumstances in parts of the film, that's well filmed and realistic. I mean, I think that film delivers what the audience want, but what I'm hearing and what I'm delighted to hear is that this film seems to have delivered much or a good deal more than that. And any film that does that, certainly at the moment, wow. Rick Roman Waugh is the director, and well,
personally, I would have advised the family to just stay with their granddad. You know, it was a nice sort of environment. They could have actually seen it out together. End of. That's the whole situation. Have to comment as well on Kira. It's well worth noting for the benefit of our radio listener. Kira has a mug which is more a kind of vase. I mean, I don't know, Kira, if you'd like to just bring that cup up there, because that is a significant vessel for actually drinking from, etc. I mean, obviously, Richard's got his wonderful bottle of gin there. No, it's obviously water, but that's a significant Winnie the Pooh mega vase. That, I mean, that takes the record for me in terms of all sorts of things. Anyway, I would go for 6.5 out of 10 for Greenland. Richard, are you going higher or are you going lower?
No, I mean, I'd go sort of 5 to 6, but I'm all for marking up movies. I'm all for marking up movies which appeal to others, because what I do frequently is, if, for example, if I'm dealing with reviewing a Marvel movie and Robin will be the expert on those, I would not be normally particularly keen, with the exception of Black Panther. I would give a mark for myself, and I'd give a mark for the fans to, you know, if you get to enjoy it.
And Kira would obviously be the go-to person if it was a Disney princess movie. We know this. It's okay. It's understandable. Rebecca, what would you go for? An 8 or a 9? Added heart rate, would it be 10 plus?
I'd say, 9. I think, like Robin said, it did have to tick boxes to be, you know, qualified as a disaster film. So for the slight predictableness of it, I would take away one slight point. That's it.
Okay. Kira?
I would say maybe an 8 or a 9, maybe possibly just because it's not my kind of genre of film, but I did think it was done really well. I mean, it is predictable, but
okay, that makes sense. And Robin, are you on a 7.5, I think, or an 8?
I don't bother with fractions. It's always an absolute with me. This is a 7, a solid 7.
Oh, we're not too far off then, basically. Yeah, 6.5, 7, etc. I could have suggested Bliss, which is even more strange and weird, but never mind. It's got Owen Wilson in. Say no more. Richard, London Film Critics Circle Awards or A Simple Passion? Where do you want to go?
I'll go just briefly to the Critics Circle Awards, because as probably this was inevitable, I think Nomadland won Best Film. And I do think that It's an Elegiac Road Movie, we'll be discussing it anon, and I think it's a very fair choice. And also the Critics Circle were particularly keen on St. Maud, a movie which, putting it mildly, chilled me to the spine. Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a weak heart, Rebecca, and you're concerned about Marjorie, then don't go down the line of St. Maud.
No. It is a remarkable film, and the symbolism is fascinating. But having said that, I'm no aficionado of horror films. The late Chadwick Boseman for Best Actor for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and we expected that. And I mean, the performance was electrifying. I know, Alex, that you had reservations about the film, but it was a fabulous performance. And Frances McDormand for The Nomadland was, I think, also expected. I would suggest that Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman, which won nothing, could always get films like, I mean, The Trial of the Chicago 7 won nothing either. Mank won nothing. You can't, even though the Critics Circle Awards have quite a few more categories than the normal awards, you can't really make or create every single film that you'd like to win. I mean, Sean Bailey, a very good performance. In Mangrove, one of the films by Steve McQueen, who won Best Director, about the Black British experience. And I think that was a very, very good choice. Maria Bakalova, who will forget her with Maya Giuliani. I mean, that scene in Borat's subsequent movie film is absolutely priceless. And so I think she deserved it. Morfydd Clark for Here Going Back to St. Maud for Best British Irish Actress, which is a different category from Best Actress. So, I mean, I think it was a virtual, obviously virtual presentation, but 40 minutes down from what normally is a wonderful evening at the Mayfair Hotel. They're hoping to have a commemorative ceremony later in the year. I have to say that I miss the ceremonies very, very much. I know we're going to get a Golden Globes, which will be partly, I think, in New York, partly in LA. We will simply have to see what happens. But I think the London Film Critics did well enough. A very, very good collection of films, a remarkable selection.
Excellent. Well, we move on from there to a movie that's based on a novel that sold nearly 500,000 copies. It documents the desires and indignities of a human heart ensnared in an all-consuming passion. Frankly, I think this should be given an 18 rating, so I don't know where you're going to take us on this one, Richard, and whether Rebecca or Kira will actually be tempted or not by this review. Well, over to you.
Where I'm taking you is firstly to contemporary Paris, directed by Daniel Arbid. We have Letitia Dosh as Helene and Sergei Polunin as the object of her desire, indeed her obsession, Alexander. I mean, she's a teacher, she has a son, and it has to be said that she lives and breathes for Alexander, who is a tattooed Russian who works at the Russian embassy in Paris. She basically lives for the times that they're together. Now, this movie should have been more than just a selection of sex scenes, one following another. You have to be interested into not just why there is this passion that she feels for him, but he ought to be somebody who is fascinating or interesting. There should be something about him. She tries to track him online to find out what he does really. Is he a spy? Has he been involved in anything nefarious and so forth? And, I mean, this is a movie that drifts. It drifts from one scene to another of lovemaking. We accept that her whole life she ends up with a psychiatrist, and so would anyone if they had to see this film again, because you have to wonder, what is it really about, other than obviously an extremely unusual relationship between two people, but I mean, if you get obsessed enough with someone that you actually go to Moscow when he disappears, she assumes he's gone back to Russia, she just goes to Moscow to breathe the air that he might be breathing. I mean, that is certainly unusual behavior, but the problem with the movie, Letitia Dosh puts in a perfectly reasonable performance. And whereas I didn't like Sergei Polunin's Alexander particularly, the fact that I didn't find him a particularly attractive character, we know she did, she's paralysed with her feelings.
It sounds as though those 50 Shades of Grey and more things are kind of emerging, and it's just enough. Alexandra has a habit of not returning her pitifully submissive voicemails, and I'm thinking, really? Oh no, for goodness sakes, what's happening here?
It is an unusual film for contemporary audiences, because she basically is his plaything. And the answer is why. And this being the case, it is a somewhat outrageous concept for audiences to come to terms with. Since it happens and it's part of the human condition, it certainly should be explored. But my point is, it's got to be interesting. I had to be doing something, but then looking at my watch.
3 stars from The Guardian, a sensitive French study of erotic obsession. Has that sold it to you, Rebecca? Is that it? You're on for this.
It definitely sounds interesting, let's say. But I think for me, you say there's a lot of sex scenes in it. That really annoys me. Nothing annoys me more than when it's there unnecessarily. So I'm all for it if it adds something to the storyline. But as you know, in the media, in TV, sex sells. And I think TV takes advantage of that quite a lot, and you end up watching something thinking, have I put the wrong movie on? So I think if it adds something to the storyline, you know, fine. If it doesn't, really gets on my nerves. So
if it's gratuitous, that's the word you're looking for. Is
exactly,
it
that's the word. Yeah, that's the
okay.
one.
Okay. Kira, is this something which you said, right, I'm signing up for Curzon Home Cinema now just to actually see A Simple Passion? I need it. I'm living in Lincoln.
Not really. I mean, for one, I'm not that lonely. And two, it's not really my type of film, to be honest. I keep saying this today, but no, I mean, I'm a bit with Rebecca on this. I mean, if, you know, there's loads of sex scenes in it after, you know, and there's not really much storyline to it besides, you know, he might be a Russian spy.
Just keep checking your watch to check that your Apple sort of heartbeat is going okay.
My heartbeat would be pumping, but not in the right way.
Yeah. And Robin, is this a case of, fine, I'm going to actually sort of sit down with Maria and we will explore this one?
No. Just no. No.
I think that's very, very clear. I would like to just a correction. It was Sean Parks, by the way, who won Best Supporting Actor for Mangrove at the Critics' Circle. And incidentally, that is a sort of film that I do enjoy, a docudrama. Mangrove is a docudrama. The Trial of the Chicago 7 is a docudrama. And one of the things with Simple Passion, there just wasn't any drama.
Which is probably one of the reasons why The Guardian gave it 3 out of 5 stars. And
I think The Guardian was interested in the concept, which of course could and should have been fascinating. It's not the fault, as I say, of the lead actress. She talks to camera rather effectively to begin with. But it's just one of these lovemaking scenes following another, and they just don't lead
anywhere. It's a job. It's a job, and how often in real life do lecturers get passionately involved with reptilian Russian diplomats? I mean, like, it happens every other week with me. It's just unbelievable. But there we are. Only kidding.
It happens to teachers who specialise in Baudelaire, Alex.
Yeah, well, that's what we see. I'm too down the line of science fiction and indeed public relations, community engagement and histories of journalism. If only I actually put some Baudelaire in there, who knows? Still, post-Valentine, you never know.
Incidentally, Alex, you haven't told us what you personally thought of Christopher Plummer, which I was surprised at.
I think he was a very, very excellent actor. And I think, as with William Shatner, another wonderful Canadian who's still, thankfully, with us for a wee while at least. Well worth developing. And certainly his role, I think, a tribute to his acting in Sound of Music. I always thought he was a lot older than he actually was. So good stuff. Okay, that's it then. We've actually had A Simple Passion, which was pretty much passionless in many ways. London's Critics Circle Awards, that's great. Kira, now that you've made a welcome return back to the Midweek Drive, has it been okay for you?
Yes, it's been wonderful, thank you. It's everything that I expected, again.
And your first telephonic Zoomer, which is great. Yeah. So having had a reasonable Zoomer, will you be back again with us?
Yes, definitely.
Splendid.
And one of the films that Keira, that we'll be discussing later in the year, I'm sure, will be Spencer with Kristen Stewart.
Yes,
she plays Diana.
Robin's a massive Kristen Stewart fan, especially in such things as Underwater and other marvelous things that, you know,
I don't really like her as an actress, to be honest. I mean, I think, you know, her main thing was Twilight, and then after that just kind of died. You know, I don't really.
I want Keira on that show with me. I want backup.
clearly coordinate that. Rebecca, has it been good for you?
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to you all about some films that I wouldn't have probably watched if I hadn't been for this. So,
and in case there are any people in Norwich actually listening, I'll just say it quite clearly now. Rebecca Bond is innocent. She had nothing to do with running over that cat. She was actually trying to rescue the cat. It is quite clear. Just to make it public, but it's okay. You are innocent of that. Yeah, you were just trying to help the little cat.
Yeah, I was just trying to do CPR. I didn't do anything else, I promise.
No, I absolutely so. I know
Alex is making this sound so much worse than it was. I discovered a cat that someone had left in the road and I stepped in to help. Promise that's all that happened.
I told you he'd do this, didn't I?
I know, and on radio as well. Great.
Robin, anything. She stepped
Robin,
on the cat.
Robin,
that's correct.
Robin, yes.
Robin, may I just join you in protesting against this matter being brought up? Because firstly, it'll confuse people like me who haven't the faintest idea what we're talking about. Secondly, it's Alex grandstanding to get outrageous attention. Thirdly, it is sensationalism that I condemn totally. And fourthly, I think we might boycott the show if he does it again.
Wow. There we are. Harsh words there from the Greenland market.
Oh, we're a team now.
Yes.
Robin, Pierce, Richard, an
outrageous. It's almost a charge. It's terrifying because you then identify an individual with something they had nothing to do with.
That's okay, honestly.
This is the way American justice works. But anyway, Robin Pierce, Richard Fitzwilliams, Rebecca Bond, Keira Olsbrook, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and happy screenings.